There's only one social internet product that I am using every day, basically, for long stretches of time to keep in touch with my closest friends.
It's not Facebook.
It's not Facebook. It's not Twitter. It's not Instagram. In fact, I don't think I could even refer to it as a social media product.
Mm.
And I think that's the distinction I actually want to talk about today, because it's a form of hanging out on the internet that's older than social media.
It's true.
And it's not about media, and it's much more about presence. And that's maybe one key difference between the basic user experience of being on a social media product and being on a product like this. It's only valuable if the person or people on the other end are there, are also there.
Mm.
There's no asynchronous nature to it. We used to know this mode of hanging out as chat rooms, and we've talked about that before as one of our earliest forms of having internet friends. And as computers got good enough, they added new interface layers on top of the chat room in different dimensions. They added voice as a way of actually talking to people instead of typing in a group online real-time place. And they also added graphics so that there could be a virtual world in which the interactions were taking place. And I think I need to own up to it now. I need to come clean, and it may be time to admit that I have a problem.
And that problem is?
That problem is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds for iOS.
A battle royale video game.
Yes, a battle royale video game. And I believe I can blame exactly two individual enablers in my life
okay. For
getting me into this situation. The first is my brother, Sam, who is the one who told me about the concept of this game. Now, of course, being my younger brother, he and I have considerable video game combat experience with one another, including multiplayer, but never online, actually. The big precursor to this in our lives was Halo and Halo 2 on the Xbox at our ancestral home.
Yeah, absolutely.
And many of the people in the PUBG squad that we will probably be talking about at some length are people who came to our basement to play Halo with us.
Yeah.
And he is the one who told me there is this new awesome game for consoles where you and 100 people jump out of an airplane onto an island and gather weapons and supplies and try to be the last one to survive. And that sounded very compelling to me. That sounded like a very fun game. So he planted the seed. The second person that I have to blame for this problem is you, Drew.
Yeah, it is.
Because you're the one who said, this game is out for iOS, and you can play it on your iPad now.
Which is definitely a lowering of a bar of how much work needs to go in to play a video game these days.
Absolutely. Oh, and by the way, it costs $0.
Yeah, that makes it even more compelling, I think.
Yep. So I installed that, and now we're here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's been a while now.
Yes, it has. We were early enough in the first season of the game that we had all ranked pretty highly by the end. And now it's season 2.
Mm-hmm.
There's another map. It's a mess. We're all in trouble with our partners.
I didn't know that.
Well, okay, then so you're not in trouble with your partner for this.
Just you, I guess.
No, not just me. I promise it's not just me. I'm not going to out any of my comrades, but there's a lot of domestic tension in our squad as a result of this game.
So for people that don't know about this game, it's interesting that you framed it as a chat room come to life with the virtual world on top of it, because it's a squad-based game, like John said, where you and 100 other people get into a video game match. The best way of playing it is with 3 other friends, and you can turn on voice chat or text chat or whatever kind of chat you want. And then you all descend from a plane onto a map. And it's a last man standing, well, last squad standing type of game, where the goal is to be the last survivor on this map as you collect armaments and kill each other. And it's great because there's almost a nothingness to the games. They stretch out. They take a long time. This isn't like some arcadey thing where the round is over in 5 minutes. I mean, I don't know, John, how long would you say they are? Like 30 minutes, an hour?
I usually budget 40 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Given that there are usually a few false starts before you get really going in a game.
That's a good point, because it certainly is no fun to get a squad together, descend, and pick a bad spot on the map and immediately get killed. That's like an instant, we have to restart the game. So that's adding even more time onto it.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of the time, in my opinion, is not shooting other people, which is what I think about when I think about a first-person shooter type or third-person shooter type video game. The majority of the time is sort of a survival-esque getting geared up, being prepared, being ready. The map progressively gets smaller as to where you have to stay to stay alive. And so making sure that you're always within these safe zones and within what they call the circle. I mean, it's a lot of just hanging out. And I think that might be why it's so compelling when you have people to play it with that you actually like.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Thank you for explaining the game. I forget sometimes that not everyone in the world is spending as much waking time in this game as they are in every other pursuit in their life.
Yeah.
But that's why. That's absolutely why I'm doing that, is because it is a way of being with people that I care about. And we have a common kind of affinity for the kind of survival combat in complete physical safety that the game enables us to pretend about while we hang out and talk about our lives.
And I'm not necessarily a gamer. Like, I don't really play a lot of games. I used to, I love it, and I think that's why this game still appeals to me, because it took away all of the reasons that I typically say, I'm not going to play a game tonight, namely the purchasing of an expensive game and the going to a television and a PlayStation or something and, like, committing. It's pretty easy to pick up my iPad and tap an icon and immediately be in a pretty good game. Like, it doesn't feel like a downgrade from an experience you might get on a PC or a console. This version of PUBG, which is how people shorten the name PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, is called PUBG Mobile, and, like, the graphics aren't as good and that kind of thing. But, I mean, it is a full game that you get for free just by downloading a big old app on your iPad or iPhone and going for it. You aren't really a game. You don't play games. Do you have a console?
No, I haven't had one since that Xbox that I mentioned that we played Halo on was technically Sam's. And that was the only thing I did, was play Halo in groups on it. He was the only one who was playing, like, solo games. I've spent a lot of time playing mostly Mac games, but they aren't first person games either.
Right.
Unless you count games like Myst and stuff like that. Myst and the sequels, but really primarily the first one, were kind of the first computer game that, I mean, they made me fall in love with the Mac, really. It was that formative of a thing. And that's a first person adventure of a certain kind. And I have spent a fair amount of time at the computer playing kind of puzzle games, mysterious games, exploration games, and as well as third person strategy games and things like that. But no, I've definitely never had an action video game like this, with the exception of those Halo basement parties. But that was 20 years ago almost.
Yeah. It is interesting that you say that they did come before social networks, which is absolutely true. Mm. We talked about this a while ago, that really the first place that I made internet friends was on a video game forum.
Yeah.
And video games were the technology that I cared about before phones and computers and that kind of device were the technology that I cared about. And one of the first things that I remember doing online in a way that was community in a real sense was getting it must have been a dial-up or DSL. I don't even remember. It was some modem that you could plug into the back of the PlayStation 2. And I played this game called SOCOM, which was extremely similar to PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds. It was just much smaller, 12 people on a map instead of 100, and one squad against another. And I made real friends playing that game and hanging out in what in my head now is this vast, like, Siberian tundra. There was this crazy snow level. And I'm sure if I looked at a picture of it now, it would be, like, so sad and, horrible, horrible graphics. But it was amazing, and it felt immersive. And it was something for me and my friends, some of them, actually most of them, who I had never met in real life, to play a game together and enjoy some time. Mm. So it is weird to go from that in, God, who knows what year, 2005? That might even be too late. Mm-hmm. The PlayStation 2 era, and jumpstart now to 2018, and find myself enjoying an experience very similar to that, much more than I am enjoying the modern equivalents of a social platform.
Yeah.
Like, those aren't interesting to me. The one that's the most interesting to me, the one that I'm having the most fun with, is one that I played when I was 13, mm-hmm. and I'm playing again now, decade and a half later.
There's so much to unpack here, because you're also playing mostly with internet friends, because they're my real life friends that you haven't met before.
Yeah.
And so you're having that similar experience. And I actually thought of another precursor for me. So it sounds like you had one that was kind of like a precursor to the whole kind of gameplay and the social component. Halo was the obvious first one that I thought of as the precursor for this for me and for all of these people that were playing PUBG with. Though, of course, it was not online. But the other one that I just thought of was Grand Theft Auto. I just remembered how many hours we put in playing that game. And that was the same people, but we were kind of taking turns. When you die, you hand the controller over to someone else. And I think that you could probably detect in our style of play, particularly me and the guys that I went to high school with who are in our squad. There's a very particular kind of mood that we can get into where we may be driving around recklessly, attracting way more attention than is strategically, like, you know, helpful in PUBG, or shooting wildly, trying to get the most impressive, like, long range downtown shots we can get instead of, you know, concentrating on defending our little spot we're in.
Right.
A lot of what we learn to do in a game like this, we learn to do playing Grand Theft Auto. But it was just us. It was just us being our goofy selves. So we didn't have the kinds of consequences that you have in a real multiplayer game like this, where you have to be disciplined. And it sounds like you did have some training with that aspect of it, and also with just sort of the like playing with strangers. Neither one of us identifies as a gamer, but I guess we have to now. We have to identify as gamers now, because we're obviously gamers now, at least for this game. But I'm very interested in the friend versus foe element of the social interactions.
Well, I think that actually it's the inverse for me, which is it's not as much as having enemies in a game that's appealing to me. It's about having allies. Because actually, I played this game yesterday and I played a solo match for the first time. Because you don't have to play this game with a group of four. You can play it with a duo or with a single person. And I was the only one around. No friends of mine were online. So I just played a single match. Mm. And I hated it. It was no fun at all to me. Because me versus the world, alone on a map, able to die at any second, that just kind of feels boring, which is sort of why I feel like as time went on, I moved away from video games as a whole, because I feel like a lot of video games are big single-player experiences. I like games that have big stories and good narratives and nice budgets, and usually if you're going to put all that money into it, that means that it's going to be a single-player experience. I have recently found some friends IRL that love video games, but for the last few years, I haven't really had anybody, and I noticed myself losing interest in these games that I was playing. My wife had actually bought me a console because she knew that I liked games, and it just sort of languished, because I think that I am a very achievement-oriented person, and I don't really have a big desire to achieve. This sounds crazy, but I really believe this. I don't have a big desire to achieve for a fictitious character. Mm. Like, I want to achieve for myself. And I'm looking at all the stuff that I'm doing for Link in Legend of Zelda, and I'm saying, man, why are you getting all this stuff? Like, what do I get out of this? I don't really get a whole lot out of this.
Where's my power bracelet?
Exactly. Yeah. Where's my master sword? And so to me, for a game to be really compelling, I have to feel like I'm achieving friendship, which, again, sounds a little crazy.
No, that's so cool.
I want to do something that is making me feel like I'm advancing myself, and it's true, like, a game can really do that. So, yeah, with PUBG, to back it up a little bit with this game, I found out about it probably just like you. Somebody who loved video games more than I did told me about this really interesting concept that was coming up for the PC only. So it wasn't on consoles yet. It wasn't on any devices except for high-powered PCs that could actually play the game. And it was a really fascinating idea, this sort of survival-type game. It appealed to me to have this 100-person game. Like, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of interesting factors and variables that don't usually happen every time that a game starts up. And I didn't really do anything with it. I never really cared about it. I just told people about it that were interested in games because I found it fascinating too. And as soon as I found out that it had come to the iPhone and iPad, I downloaded it because of my extreme interest and fascination with this game type. And I think I remember pretty clearly Like, I won one of the first rounds that I played, screenshotted it, and sent that screenshot to you. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what I said exactly, but it was basically like, I can't believe how much fun this is. Or like, just sharing in my weird iPad video game experience with somebody else that also has weird technology experiences. And it was probably like a week or two later that you like invited me to your like squad, which you have like a full-fledged, you know, chat room dedicated just to these people to like find matches and that kind of stuff. And it totally took me off guard because I thought I was going to send it to you and you were going to think that I was kind of funny for doing it. But clearly it like got you at a much deeper level than I ever anticipated my screenshot would.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was very easy for me to mobilize my former military unit in Halo to come play this game. And it's so funny, the stages of life that we're in now. This group of people who have been playing in a variety of ways since we were in middle school. To point to this part of our lives and say this is the point where we should all really get super into a video game again, it feels irresponsible sometimes. But it's also revitalizing our friendship.
Right.
We're all getting sucked into these like different worlds, transformed into new people with new lives. And this is the one thing that's bringing us back together. It was so easy to get the group mobilized around this. And we do spend a funny amount of time hanging out in the waiting area talking, or just posted up in some defensible position talking about whatever, because it's like we're combining two things. We're combining this addictive, compelling gameplay concept with like our time to hang out with each other. There are other precedents for that too, for some of us. The way I set it up is this, as this chat room with a graphical component that also happens to have a game. I mean, the reason why I can do that so flippantly is because some of us also spent a lot of time, maybe more than I'd care to admit, but here I go admitting it anyway, in Second Life, particularly in college. That was when that, I mean, I don't know, you wouldn't call that a game. People got really upset when you called that a game, actually.
A virtual world.
When that virtual world was really popular was, you know, 05, 06, 07. And we were spending a lot of time, you know, kind of exploring the seedy underbelly of that world and meeting very strange people and kind of messing up their day, you know, like they were just there for their one escape in their lives, and we just showed up as these 20-year-olds with no respect for it, and we're just causing havoc. But we also spent a fair amount of time sitting on meditation cushions at tea houses with synthesized wind chimes, talking deeply about what was going on for us.
Yeah.
Those of us who are doing that are trying to recapture some of that feeling with this world too. And like, that's one of the really interesting things. The two worlds, the two maps that we have in this game are kind of beautiful places. When you go inside of buildings, you realize that it's some kind of burnt out dystopian war zone. But, you know, when you're up on a mountain, it's a pretty peaceful thing. That's the really actually the major difference in how it feels to be on there compared to Twitter or Facebook, because they're so ugly and they're so noisy. And this is so beautiful and this is so peaceful until, of course, the war breaks out.
But when the war breaks out, it's obviously not a real thing. It's a fictitious fight.
Yeah.
The war breaks out in the same way that someone's going to tag you and tag you out of a game of dodgeball or something like that. So I totally agree with you.
And you can even come to really respect and be impressed by the people who kick your ass.
Absolutely.
if they do it impressively enough.
And also you can feel totally great about it if you put yourself in some dumb situation and you died, but it was in some weird blaze of glory where everyone's laughing as the matches ended. That's the thing is, in another game, it might feel like, wow, that was a waste of 30 minutes. But no match to me of PUBG is ever wasted, because the whole experience is you just hanging out for a long time. So it's hanging out until it's over. And hopefully you're the last person hanging out with your squad.
Yeah.
But it might not be that way.
I don't know. I might take a harder line than you. There's a kind of frustration that I have felt in some games. That's one of the things I'm most worried about in my behavior around this game. Let me give you an example. Like, let's say we have been doing pretty well for 10, 15 minutes, but now the ring is starting to close and we have a whole squad and a vehicle and we have to move a really long distance. And we all pile up in the car and you have that horrible negotiation of who's going to drive, And the person who is the worst at driving is always the most excited to drive. And now you're all piled in the car, and the person drives the Jeep off a cliff and gets it wedged into a crack in between two mountains, and you can't drive anymore. You clamber out of the car. One person, let's say, gets knocked out by the car because of the accident that you've had. And now you're all a mess and you're in the open, and then people pop up and kill you all. Like, that feeling of like incompetence, you know, causing the end of the game without the blaze of glory. I'm a little worried about how much that kind of feeling is starting to bother me.
Well, let me say the opposite. I think that there's something really significant about games like this that allow you to tell stories like that, because that story is a unique experience that only you and that group had. And I think that's really, really special. And yeah, like, is it frustrating? Sure. And we can talk further about whether or not that frustration is a good thing or a bad thing. But
oh, you make a good point, though.
I've always been fascinated by these games. Actually, you brought up Grand Theft Auto, and I played the Grand Theft Auto 5, I think, which I think is still receiving updates, even though it's many years old at this point, which was the first Grand Theft Auto to have an online component. Mm. And those same friends that I played SOCOM with and Halo 3 with, I also played Grand Theft Auto with. And the fun of it was sort of, now, instead of just having one person in control of a sandbox where everything else is artificial intelligence, now we could have a group of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people in this world. And we would just do the weirdest stuff that was completely unique to us. One time, I'm sure that everyone knows what Grand Theft Auto is. I would be kind of impressed if someone didn't at this point. But, you know, this very sandboxy, the whole world can be kind of messed with game. And one of us stole a bus, got the cops to like pay attention to it and care about it. And then we all climbed in the bus and tried to reenact the movie Speed by not being able to go under a certain speed limit the entire time that we were being chased and having to create little objectives for us along the way and that kind of thing. And I think that it's really, really amazing that these games exist, because what they kind of end up creating within these communities is war stories. Mm. And the war stories aren't real, and they don't have that same level of depth that someone who has experienced something very, very real does. But it's not supposed to. It's supposed to be a more fun version of that camaraderie. It's supposed to be this sort of different thing. And where most video games are completely scripted, you know, you can't go off this certain narrative path, with games where you get to create your own story, there's such a level of interest to me in the way that that helps bond people. And maybe, you know, tear them apart if the person that drove the Jeep was the one that did get it stuck in the crack and now everyone's mad at them.
I'll forgive him eventually.
Yeah, but exactly. To go back to, what was that, one or two episodes ago where we were talking about having the, man, it's clear that I'm not a business person because I can never remember what those things are called.
Personal relationship manager.
Yeah, the PRM, the PRM.
Yeah.
There is a level of hurt that happens from non-communication that cannot happen from bad communication. Mm. So the very fact that you're playing a game with these people, even if the game ends in abject failure, is better than not talking to these people at all. Which, yeah, you know, you haven't said this, but, you know, these people that you're playing this game with, they're from your high school experience, and you grew up in Georgia, right?
Yep.
And now you live in California. So I'm assuming that all of these people that you're playing with, they're not people that you see on the regular anymore.
Not regularly, but some of them are people I talk to every day. Most of them are people, actually, some of them are people who were best friends of mine in high school, who I haven't talked to in months and months before we started playing this game every day.
I am recognizing something in the friendship that I have with you about internet friends as a whole, which is, okay, there are different levels of how it feels to be friends with somebody that isn't physically in front of you all the time. Mm-hmm. Because you and I, we started our friendship on Twitter, and we didn't have each other's numbers or really do a lot of DMing or anything. So it was just messaging each other in a public capacity. Mm-hmm. And then at some point that shifted where now we're texting each other, and that feels more intimate. And like, you and I, we can communicate a lot of ideas that way. And then now we've met up a few times and we've actually hung out in person and had some meals and just sat around a table and talked. And that feels different. And I would say that there is another kind of different. I'm not sure that I'm like willing to give them weighting, because I don't know which one is better than the other. Mm-hmm. But I do know that they all feel different, and that being in a virtual room with somebody that also has a virtual body feels different than all of those things that I just said.
Yeah.
Like me and you playing PUBG and being in the same building or wandering around. When I play PUBG, I never really know what I'm doing. I don't ever really have like a marker of where to go. So I'm happy to kind of follow the crowd. And so like one of the last games that we played, and you would pick out a location and I would follow you. And that act of me following your virtual body around, it felt definitely personal. And that's something to be remarked upon as we sort of go into this more augmented world, mm-hmm. about what it feels like to be in a virtual room with somebody else, not online with somebody else, not in a text chat with somebody else, but in a virtual room with somebody else. There's definitely something there.
This is something that Second Life never had in as visceral a way, because Second Life was so technical that really doing anything with an object in that game was more like building or modifying the object than it was interacting with it.
Right.
And so when you were standing with somebody and you wanted to interact around an object together, it was so awkward. And there was just like cursor that shot out of people's hands. And the moving of the object was like dragging sliders around. You didn't actually manipulate the object. The mechanics of the game that we're playing together, because it's got supplies and there's needs and people's virtual bodies have virtual needs, and there's a team collaborative component, it creates these very simple mechanics that make it into so much more realistic of an interaction. There's the basic level of like, okay, I'll look north and you look south, or like I'm coming into the same building as you, you take the fourth floor, I'll take the fifth floor. You know, there's like spatial relations, but then there's also like, I'm hurt. Do you have any medical supplies?
Right.
I'm 50 feet away from you. Can we get around the corner? I don't know. I'll lay down some fire. There's real help that you can give and receive. There are these very real kind of mundane interactions. But the thing that's so compelling about them to me, I think, is that they lead to these very urgent, very moving kinds of interactions. This leads me to that article that Robin Sloan wrote in The Atlantic about Fortnite. Did you read this article?
Yeah, I did.
This is the first time we've said the word Fortnite, and there may be something interesting to explore there about why
we're not playing that game,
which is a much, much more popular game. So I'll explain what I understand about Fortnite to be kind of the difference, because it's necessary to explain what his article was about. Fortnite is the same concept, completely the same concept, but there are a few different mechanics that the game has. First of all, it's aesthetically very different. This is one of the things that I hate about it, even without having played it. It's very cartoonish and kind of makes light of the situation, and there's very cartoonish graphics and there's cartoonish costumes. PUBG, the game that we're playing, is gritty and warlike, and it may be a little bit alt-right feeling.
Oh,
it may
God.
Be a little bit, you know, self-serious in the way that it portrays, like, we're survivalists and playing video games, but it like takes very seriously. It portrays this situation of being trapped on an island with 100 people who are trying to kill each other as a serious situation. Fortnite seems to me to somewhat make light of that situation.
I think that a good example of that is in PUBG, you drop out of a plane.
Mm-hmm.
In Fortnite, you drop out of like a aerial bus with balloons on it or something weird like that. So
right,
yeah, it's a very different vibe from the jump.
There's two mechanics to Fortnite that are mentioned in this Rodman Sloan article that highlight a very big difference that he exploited to find a new way to play the game. One is that it has emotes, which are graphical like emoji that you emit from your head or something that other players can see.
Wave, blow a kiss, bow, salute.
Yeah, and so PUBG has hand chat messages like get in the car or stay alert or all these things, but those are just for talking to your team without a microphone. And obviously when you're using the mic, you're actually talking, saying those things. But that's all it has. And yes, now the mobile version of PUBG now has the ability to talk to everyone instead of just your team, but nobody does that.
Right.
So this is like a way of communicating wordlessly to other players. And also, I don't think there are teams in Fortnite, are there? It's just solo.
Is that true? If that's true, then I'll never play that game. Yeah, I don't know. I've not played it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's true, but for the purposes of what Robin Sloan was doing, that was the situation, is that you're solo, but you have this emote capability. So you can communicate to other players, but they are going to try to kill you. The other feature that he mentions that Fortnite has, that the way that it's manifested is pretty interesting, but like I would never respect this for a moment in a game like this, is it has these dance floors with like party lights going and music playing, and they're just kind of scattered throughout. You know, like PUBG has like bombed out schools, and Fortnite has empty dance floors, and people can dance in the dance floors. They can make their avatars dance, and this kind of peacenik like detente seems to have taken hold, where like if people are dancing at a dance party, you like don't kill people and you're shunned if you do. So that's a very interesting mechanic. But the one that Robin Sloan exploited for this article is the emote. We should talk about the difference between solo and team play, because I also have very physiological differences in solo games with how I feel compared to how I feel in a squad game. But it's very scary is the point. Like a solo game, your adrenaline is higher, and you're constantly looking out and making sure you're not going to get killed. And so Robin Sloan is playing this game and feeling very nervous. And, you know, every time he runs into somebody, they try to kill him, and he tries to kill them, and it gets into him, and he doesn't like it. And he starts to realize that he has this one capability of like creating a heart bubble to show to someone. And he decides to try that to see what would happen if he has the opportunity to kill somebody. He doesn't. And then he uses the heart emote to try and make friends. And a lot of times he gets killed anyway, but then occasionally it works, and then he ends up with an ally, and they agree tacitly not to kill each other and to play the game cooperatively. And that's where it breaks open for him, and he has this article's really amazing. The whole world breaks open for him, and he realizes that like we need to be this way as a civilization, because like encountering real aliens is going to be just like this, and we need to learn how to show them that we come in peace and all, you know. It's fantastic. And the solo thing that I was going to say before is just that what I've noticed is I do play solo a fair amount of the time. And when I get close to the end of the game in solo, I start to get nervous. I start to like tense up. There's actually this familiar kind of back spasm that I've gotten used to feeling when I'm like one of the last few people in a solo game, because I'm so wound up about trying to win the game. And it's almost unpleasant to the point where even if I win, I feel this huge relief. But if I get second, I'm so messed up. If I get killed by the last guy, I'm like such a mess after that in a solo game. And that's just not what it's like in a squad game.
No, it's not.
When the game ends, you either like, ugh, or you're like, yeah, all together. And it's a totally happy experience either way. And solo is so much more nerve-wracking.
When I first played the game, and I sent you that screenshot of me winning, I told you something along the lines of like, I don't know why I liked that so much. Like, I don't know why it feels so good. You know, why was I compelled to take a screenshot of the victory page and then share it with you, somebody who has not played the game with me? You know, like what was that about? And you actually said something that was really interesting to me, so much so that I had saved it here, which, as I was saying, like, why, you know, why did that do something so visceral inside of me? Your response is, what if victory provides an essential reward to the human hunter-gatherer mind, now deprived of nearly all exhilarating victory? And I thought, that's a pretty good that's a pretty good way of describing video games and why they're so appealing.
It's also a very John Mitchell text message.
It is an extremely John Mitchell text message, which I love. But what I realized, and you'll see me coming back to this again and again as we have this conversation, because it's really like all that matters to me. But what I realized is, over time, that sense of victory didn't really matter as much as it had for me in the past, I think maybe because of how I'm wired. And by the time that you had invited me to this squad, which was maybe 3 weeks or 2 weeks or maybe even 1 week after I had played that game, I was ready to delete it, because playing it alone was no fun for me, even playing it on a squad, because you can play with four people, get matched to three other people that you do not know. It can be a fun experience, but it is not always a fun experience, because people that you get randomly matched to,
I would say 1 in 10.
Yes, are real dumb and make some bad decisions, and it's not fun because you're not really talking. No one has their mics turned on. It would be kind of weird to even do that. So it's not the same experience. But to me, just like that victory is providing a reward, I wonder if, like, as Robin Sloan was saying in that article, what if being allied with other people provides an essential feeling of community itself that we are also now completely deprived of? Like, isn't that what we're deprived of? Isn't that even why we've been having some of these conversations about social networks and how we don't feel great about it? Because instead of providing a sense of community, it's providing a sense of, I don't know, unending terror, like deep levels of anxiety. I don't know what the heck it's supposed to be doing anymore, but it's not doing something great. Andy Bayo posted a tweet recently, which was a search term that showed your exact timeline, the people that you follow, but instead of today's date, it was today's date in 2010.
Oh, man.
And everyone's reaction to clicking that button was like, what a difference that's made. You know, what a difference 8 years has made. How lighthearted this community felt. How simple it was. Simpler times, you know? Mm. And now it just is nothing of the sort. People were retweeting all of their tweets from 2010 or 2008 or, you know, these years back, where it was just a fun place to be. And I don't know if we can have that sensation anymore. And it is strange to me that a video game that you're saying is fairly gritty, a pretty dark place with a pretty serious and final ending to every round, feels to me like a much happier, simpler place than the social networks that we have. And you said earlier that games can feel irresponsible to play. And my question is, like, why is that? Why is an hour with friends, like a deep, long, nice hour where you're talking with three friends, somehow worse in objective terms than an hour where you're scrolling an Instagram feed? Scrolling an Instagram feed alone. How is that somehow a better way of spending your time than this game?
It's not worse. It's not worse than Instagram. It only feels irresponsible in a very subtle way. I'm just reacting to what you said. You said something about the community, the positive side. Like, this is a thing that creates community, and isn't that what we've lost? You know, in contrast to the thing I was saying about losing our hunter-gatherer instincts or whatever, this very paleo Jordan Peterson thing I said. The thing I'm thinking now is that it's all of a piece, that part of why we might lack a sense of community in the kinds of quote-unquote social interactions we have now is because we lack a shared objective or set of objectives. And that might be the magic formula of this game, is that we have something to unite with each other to achieve together that we can't achieve alone.
Yeah.
And the only irresponsible feeling left for me thinking about how much time I'm spending doing this is that I wish we could find more material, meaningful, real-world objectives to collaborate on this way. That the only thing that's irresponsible is that we're practicing this feeling in a totally virtual game that is violent. And I understand perfectly, thanks to you now that you've explained it to me, why it's so important to me that I have this. But one lack or longing that I feel about it is that I wish we could find that same sense of shared purpose to form community around in fixing the broken world.
Well, and maybe that's why we feel a little disheartened around the social networks that we have right now.
Because they have no point at all.
Yeah, because that concept of wanting to achieve something online is absolutely not happening there. I don't know how I could rally what is unrallyable around a actual good cause. You can certainly do that in a smaller group, but not with these, not with the platforms that we have, not with the cards that we've been dealt. And yeah, I get that. Maybe it isn't the most responsible thing to do to spend 40 minutes or however many minutes a day.
Let's be real. We're playing three games.
So a good chunk of time every day doing nothing but killing people and trying to do a last man standing type thing. But to me, I think that, at least it's instilling a sense of community in a way that the other social networks, the other platforms of today's world are certainly not doing.
Yeah. We got to get it somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's no surprise that we're getting it from a game, because all of the compulsions that we've already built up towards, you know, handheld touchscreen technology, they can piggyback on. I mean, we haven't mentioned Pokemon Go, or what was the precursor to Pokemon Go, the Google thing?
Oh, yeah, I don't even remember its name. Yeah, it was a weird sci-fi augmented reality game.
Those two, I mean, the first one wasn't really that much of a phenomenon, but Pokemon certainly was, because they just slapped some branding on that old game, and then everybody's millennial nostalgia kicked in.
Sure did.
First of all, I should say, I don't know about you, but I was susceptible to Pokemon Go. In fact, Ariel was also susceptible to it. This was the first game thing that she and I ever did together. And certainly part of it was about the fact that you could go out into the real world, quote unquote, Listen to me. I'm so casual about that now. I used to be so militant about how it's all real. the walking around in the sunshine part was part of what appealed to it to us about it. But we also did, I mean, in LA, you know, on Venice Beach, the Pokemon were crazy on Venice Beach.
Oh,
so
I
we
bet.
we were meeting all kinds of people. There was a little bit of awkwardness to surmount with the talking in Pokemon words out loud. But once you get past that, there was a certain amount of real world community building happening. But it faded out. It became indistinguishable from people looking at their phones doing other things. There was nothing about the mechanics of that augmented reality thing in the smartphone paradigm that we were in at the time that broke any social conventions in a way that could build this kind of lasting community. So, like, the next phase of big popular games to play with this, with these mechanics, were not augmented reality games. We're back now to a sort of more conventional kind of gaming. I wonder whether that application, you know, I think we've talked so many times about this augmented reality world, the screenless world, where there can be a software interface to the stuff going on all around us all the time. It is hard for me to think of a so-called killer app for that experience. And we're on to something in this conversation about how compelling and necessary from a social standpoint these kinds of feelings are that these games are bringing up. But I still have a really hard time imagining that the first phenomenon of this hardware paradigm is going to be a game that lots of people are going to be out in the world playing, that some people will be playing and other people won't be playing. Like, I can understand, it sounds like a good sci-fi movie. In fact, there probably is a movie about this, where some people are playing the game and other people aren't playing the game, and the social pressure to play the game is so intense because everyone else is playing the game that, you know, it slowly takes over the world. But I just can't conceive of it. And this closed world where we can pretend it's guns and ammo is so much more tangible for people that I think that it has a much clearer, simpler appeal, mass appeal, than something that really gets out into and blurs with actual reality would.
Yeah, but what are you saying that we're going to be stuck in this interim for a while? Is that what you're feeling?
I'm saying that I'm skeptical that it's going to translate. I'm skeptical that we're going to be able to piggyback on the beautiful social elements of this kind of gaming into building a world that feels more like this.
Oh, completely. Well, in a very weird way, the whole communal aspect of it is a complete accident.
Uh-huh.
Like, that it is not PUBG's goal. In fact, PUBG has a very slot machine like desire, which is to get you to, it's kind of weird. It's to get you to buy clothes for your character.
Right.
Which, I mean, is not extremely compelling to me. Maybe it's compelling to other people. And it's even weird because in the game, you actually take off. If you buy a really cool hat, you're going to have to take it off to put on a really good helmet that you find on the ground. So
yeah,
I'm not exactly sure how that works. But I mean, clearly these games are doing extremely well for themselves. There is no problem about how much money they're bringing in. But they did not say, hey, let's create a great, great place for four friends to get together. They said, hey, let's create a game where you feel addicted until you become the victor, round after round after round.
Yeah.
Just like when I played SOCOM on the PlayStation 2, they did not say, hey, let's let this 14-year-old kid find some friends online that are going to be, you know, formative for him in the next 6 to 10 years of his life. They said, how can we get this guy to play more games? Oh, we can do it by getting him online and, you know, playing with other people, just like people are doing on the PC right now. So this is a happy accident that we've stumbled into, that one of the places that we feel the most connected to others is via this virtual world that is meant to be a run and gun shoot 'em up. And I think that it is a unfortunate tragedy that the social networks we have become so jaded from, that this is your new platform that you are existing on currently online.
Mm.
I think that maybe one of the things that's important here is the fact that it is kind of weird that this game, which literally has crates that you're supposed to win and be rewarded by and open up, you know, to like get new clothing, is less of a slot machine than our social networks are.
Yeah.
Like,
wow.
I feel less pulled upon by that mechanic and by the game. Yes, do I want to play another game? Yes. Will I play another game? Yes. But I am pretty, I mean, maybe you'll say differently, but I feel pretty in control of when I'm playing PUBG and when I'm not playing PUBG, which I cannot say when I'm talking about when I get on Twitter or when I get on Instagram.
Ugh. I thought being obsessed with PUBG was depressing, and now I see it very differently.